my personality to be jittery. It's part of my charm.
Wrestling fans,
are you ready?
It's time for my 1-2-3 cents of a podcast on the Jittery Monkey Podcasting Network.
Give me a hell yeah!
Now, here's your host.
The man is also a very long, dear personal friend of mine.
Does the guy have a name?
Yes, he has a name.
Kevin Huntsberger.
Woo!
Hey everyone, welcome to episode 51 of my 1-2-3 cents, the podcast. We're going to jump right in and start talking about a lot of different things, but mostly going to be talking about Survivor Series as well as The Undertaker. Chad is joining us once again from parts unknown, but before we get into the big discussion today, woke up to the news this morning that WWE Hall of Famer, wrestling legend Nick Bockwinkel has passed away at the age of 80, and he had been battling Alzheimer's disease for quite some time, so our thoughts and prayers are with Bockwinkel and his family and friends. And Chad, I know we were talking before the show, and you don't really have a whole lot of memories of him as a wrestler, but you do remember him as his time in WCW as the commissioner.
Yeah, I just remember him showing up on WCW programming, and I probably knew who he was, but I didn't have any point of reference for, really why he was treated as such a in high regard when he came in, because I didn't watch a lot of AWA wrestling and didn't see him as champion. And then, like, all of a sudden, and he didn't really do anything in NWA or, you know, WCW to my knowledge or my remembrance. So then all of a sudden he just shows up and you know, he's like the top guy. He's the Jack Tunney, if you will, for a while. And it seemed kind of odd to me at the time, but now, having grown up and knowing more of his history, I still have not seen a lot of his matches. But I know the history of him more, and so it makes sense. And I think he was one of those last, I would say maybe one of the last legitimate wrestling champions. Would that be fair to say?
I do think that's fair to say, yes.
Like he was more of a technical wrestler than a sports entertainer.
Yeah, he was definitely, and I remember, I started watching wrestling in 83, 84, so he retired in 87. We did get AWA when I was growing up on ESPN. After school, it would be on, and my biggest memories of him was when he lost the title, the AWA world title, to Kurt Hennig. Larry Zbyszko had given Kurt a roll of quarters or dimes or something, and he used that to knock out the champ. But an interesting fact about Bockwinkel was he didn't win his first AWA world title until the age of 40. So I know a lot of times, at least in this day and age, you know, the age of 40 in wrestling is, depending on who you are, I guess, is kind of viewed as being old. But that's really when he hit his peak, I guess, and became world champion several different times. The last time, of course, being that run against who later became Mr. Perfect, Kurt Hennig. So he feuded briefly too with Larry Zbyszko after that, but pretty much called it quits then and retired, and then became a figurehead in WCW. So definitely our thoughts and prayers out to his family and friends and fans this morning. And I guess there's no easy way to ever transition from talking about a wrestling death, but we're going to...
Well, we're going to be talking about the dead man. I think that's that's a perfect segue.
Well, I am, so. Yes, exactly. So that is the next topic of conversation, The Undertaker, who coincidentally enough, or ironically enough, on November 22nd, which is when Survivor Series is this year, is also the exact date of when The Undertaker debuted 25 years ago, November 22nd, 1990, Thanksgiving night. It was the Survivor Series, and Undertaker was the mystery partner on the Million Dollar Man Ted DiBiase's team. The Million Dollar Team, of course, along with Greg the Hammer Valentine and the Honky Tonk Man, taking on the Dream Team of Dusty Rhodes, the Hart Foundation, who were the tag team champions at the time, and Coco Beware. And The Undertaker before he came to WWF at the time, was Mean Mark Callis of the Skyscrapers in WCW, and had a brief history in World Championship or World Class Championship Wrestling as well. But Chad, what were your initial thoughts and impressions of The Undertaker when he debuted 25 years ago?
Well, this was back before, obviously before the internet, when you could watch pay-per-views easily. And the only pay-per-view that I ever ordered was WrestleMania 5. So I did not see the debut until they showed it, like, on the syndicated shows or primetime wrestling. I did not associate him with Mean Mark Callaway or whatever his name was in WCW. It just, back then when guys jumped, I was stupid and didn't be like, you know, it took me 3 months to realize Big Boss Man was Big Bubba Rogers. So, he was an imposing force. He was different than what you would expect, especially coming into that match with the other wrestlers that were in there. And I think, and maybe this might be revisionist history looking back now, I don't think anyone ever would have thought that character would be around, you know, 2 years, much less 25 years.
And that was going to be my next question to you, was did you think it was going to last? Because I certainly, yeah, I'm in that camp as well.
I think, you know, if you look back at that time period, Hogan was still champion. He was still kind of your top guy. And the modus operandi was take a huge threat, build them up, feed them to Hogan, and then they kind of disappear.
Mm-hmm.
And so after, you know, when Taker got the title match at 91, I don't think anybody expected, one, Taker to really beat Hogan, and then I don't think anybody expected him to carry on much after that.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I was shocked when The Undertaker won his first heavyweight title, because it seemed like back then, you know, I know you had the Ultimate Warrior and you had, Macho Man Randy Savage, Hulk Hogan. Those were your three, I would say, your three biggest stars in WWE at that time. And they weren't, Ultimate Warrior was obviously it wasn't a real person, if you will. You know what I mean? He had that kind of character going. But you never really saw the character or the gimmicked guys getting any kind of title run, and like you said, they were all kind of monsters that were fed to Hogan, and you know, Hogan reigned supreme. But that whole time period, then kind of we've talked before about building up guys in this day and age, and they're really not doing that. But you know, Undertaker,
well, if they do it, then they feed them to the modern day Hogan of John Cena, and then the guys kind of disappear.
Yeah,
you know, you look at Bray Wyatt, Rusev. I'm sure there are others that I can think of that go beyond the last 2 years, the guys that then kind of flounder because they don't have a direction for them.
Yeah, and The Undertaker, you know, it was an interesting character from the start, because when they brought him in, you know, he was with Brother Love, which I thought was an odd pairing. Now, yeah, that obviously didn't last long, and then it was Paul Bearer, Percy Pringle, who came in and kind of sealed the deal, I think, with the gimmick. It really all kind of came together and worked. And, you know, that imposing, we had Jake the Snake Roberts, who used to DDT a guy and then put the snake on him. And then Brutus Beefcake would use the sleeper hold and then cut their hair. Undertaker, you know, Tombstone, and then zip him up in a body bag. I mean, it was a very, especially in that time period, because that was still kind of that cartoony, lots of, you had the Bushwhackers and you had Superfly Jimmy Snuka and Rowdy Roddy Piper. You know, you had the cartoonish kind of guys that were still kind of around, but The Undertaker kind of changed the game a little bit, I thought.
Yeah, I could see that. And also, pairing him with Paul Bearer really helped, because Taker didn't have to speak.
Mm-hmm.
So he didn't have to sell the matches or the gimmick himself. And, you know, Percy Pringle was great as Percy Pringle, but then I think he even got better as Paul Bearer. And it just, those two characters worked so well together. And I think, you know, even in today, there are a lot of guys who could probably use someone like a Paul Bearer to help get them. So I think it was just the perfect match, the perfect talent, and I guess the perfect storm of everything coming together to make the character. And even as cheesy as some of the things Taker has done over the 25 years, it's built into that character. So it somewhat works, even though it doesn't necessarily fit into the WWE universe.
Mm-hmm. And I would argue that when it comes, you know, I don't know that there's ever been anyone who's had that kind of career. 25 years. He's had at least, you figure he's had at least one match a year for the last 25 years. You know, the last, what, 5-10 years? Yeah. He's obviously significantly slowed down. Just the staying power, and I'm not the biggest Undertaker fan, and I would, you know, but I respect what he has done and what he has meant to not just WWE, but to the business in general. And I would say probably the greatest gimmick going today and in the history of professional wrestling. I can't think of anyone else who has had that kind of, like I said, staying power, but also brought so much to a gimmick that has transcended 2.5 decades.
Yeah, I mean, I think number two would probably be the Ultimate Warrior, but then Warrior wasn't around for, I mean, he hadn't been around for 15 years?
Yeah.
So that's more of a persona, but yeah, keeping a gimmick fresh. And because if Warrior would have been wrestling for 25 years, would people still care?
Mm-hmm.
You know, or this is the fact that he, because he wrestled so, he'd been out of the limelight for so long, does that help keep his image intact?
Yeah, and you know, and that's the thing too with The Undertaker. I mean, he's still, after 25 years, is getting that huge pop every time that gong hits and, yeah, you know, he makes the lightning bolts happen or whatever.
Yeah, I think it also helps that he, you know, only wrestles once or twice a year now.
Yeah.
Keep him fresh. If he was out there every week, you know, I think he would be, and I could be completely off on this, but I think he would be more in the Cena territory where you would get more of a split reaction.
Mm-hmm.
I think people react to the gong because it's like, oh, and that entrance. And then I think once he started wrestling, the attention would be, you know, people would be talking to each other, going to the bathroom, whatever. I don't know if he would hold on to the audience if he was wrestling full time.
That's a fair point. Now, you were watching earlier, and I haven't seen it yet. I guess WWE has produced 25 best memories or 25 best things about The Undertaker?
25 numbers that best describe The Undertaker. Look up 25 numbers Undertaker on YouTube.
Okay.
Real quick, just some numbers from this.
Sure.
I'll run down. 9,100 days since Undertaker debuted.
Wow.
So, that's a big number. He has been on 161. He's had 161 pay-per-view matches. Want to guess how many of those he won?
I'm going to say 100.
92.
Oh.
Yeah. He, in his, you know, he is 21 or 22 and 1 at WrestleMania.
Uh-huh.
He has beaten all four members of Evolution at WrestleMania.
I knew that.
Did you know that? Okay. He main evented the very first Raw.
Yes, against Damian Demento.
Yep. And he is the only person from that show still wrestling.
Wow.
WWE. And he has walked, he's never been champion at Mania, but he has walked out of WrestleMania 3 times after winning the title, which is the most of any competitor.
Really?
Winning, yeah.
Okay.
And then, and I'm sure we'll get into this later with Survivor Series talk, but he has faced Kane on 19 occasions on pay-per-view.
Really?
He is 14-5 against Kane.
14-5?
Yes.
Okay.
So,
That's interesting, because I knew that the only one that I can remember him losing to Kane with was, I think it was Hell in a Cell a few years ago when Kane, or when Paul Bearer had the urn with the big flash of light and it distracted The Undertaker. Yeah. That's the only time I remember Kane beating him, so that's it. That's an interesting factoid.
He's had, I think it was 15 title runs, 14 or 15 titles.
Titles, not just the world heavyweight.
I think it's 6 world or WWE titles, 1 hardcore title, and 7 tag team runs.
Okay. Let's see if we can name all. Well, I guess that doesn't mean he had 7 partners, though. I know it was Kane, Big Show.
Yeah, I think most of it, I think they said he won 3 or 4 with Kane.
Yeah.
So Kane, Big Show.
I think Austin, maybe.
Yeah, he and Austin were champs. In that you know, wacky partners who are feuding with each other, accidentally win tag title, booking crush that was. Pretty big from the late 90s to the early 2000s.
Who do you think, or what, I guess I've got 2 questions for you, and we'll take them one at a time. What is your favorite Undertaker moment or memory, or do you have one?
Well, he isn't retired yet, so I can't go with that. yeah, I probably should have thought about that one. Instead of watching these, I'm trying to think of everything that he's done, and I can't think of anything off the top of my head. I'm sure if I really sat here and think, I'm sure it would be something from like the first 6 or 7 years.
Mm-hmm.
Because there hasn't really been anything in the last decade or so that has wowed me. It might be the whole locking the Undertaker, or not the Undertaker, the Ultimate Warrior in the coffin.
I was kind of thinking of that myself. Yeah, that was early on in those days.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, maybe this will be easier to answer. I don't know. Who do you think his greatest or best opponent was?
For the Kane feud, I probably would have gone with Kane, but since it seems so one-sided, I don't think that's a good. You probably have to go with Brock Lesnar, even though Brock has dominated Taker to an unfair degree. It's mm-hmm. I think those matches, even though it brought out more of the MMA Taker side, I just think those are the. If WWE does a rivalry show for Taker, I think you got to put Lesnar in there.
My pick is Mankind.
That's a good one. I completely forgot about Mankind.
Just because I felt like, you know, and when Mankind finally arrived, and it was the natural feud to have with Undertaker. But up until that point, I really felt like the Undertaker had pretty much, and you know, he was 6-7 years into his run. Had dominated everybody, and Mankind kind of was that bump in the road. I know he beat him a couple of times, you know, sometimes by nefarious means, but and then that whole, I go back to the Hell in a Cell in 98 at the King of the Ring, and when Undertaker threw Mick off the top of that, and just the brutality of that match, and it was, to me, that was all kind of the perfect storm too with
yeah.
You know, and I believe it was Survivor Series 96. It had followed SummerSlam when Paul Bearer turned on Undertaker and started managing Mankind. And I feel like, and maybe I'm wrong here, I thought Undertaker lost that match too to Mankind, but I might be wrong about that. But
the boiler room match?
No, that was the one he lost, because that's when Paul Bearer turned on him at SummerSlam. But then I felt like even in the return bout, but maybe I'm wrong, because I remember he had left for a little bit and came back as what I called Vampire Undertaker when he dropped down from the ceiling with the wings and stuff. But yeah, I mean, those were some of my Undertaker memories. And then, of course, I wasn't a big fan of the Ministry of Darkness and that whole, you know, Attitude Era time when he was marrying trying to marry Stephanie and hanging
people on the symbol.
Yeah, that kind of got a little hokey, I thought. But, you know, if anyone has kind of gone through the times and readjusted and reinvented themselves, I would definitely say it was him because, like we said, you know, he went from the dead man, you know, the purple gloves and the Undertaker costume, if you will, to the American Badass, to the MMA stuff, to back to where we kind of started from with the dead man gimmick.
Yeah. Now, speaking of that transitioning, how much weight do you put into the Kevin Nash reports that the reason for Biker Taker was they were trying to get Taker to jump to WCW and they knew they couldn't use the Undertaker gimmick, so they made him more. So he went to the Biker Taker to be kind of a more human-ass character that could easily translate over to a jump to WCW.
See, but to me, okay, whose idea was that to do then?
I do not know. Again, I'm basing this on Kevin Nash. You know, would never tell a fib or exaggerated story.
Yeah, I mean, and, you know, I think that's also, you know, besides Shawn Michaels, The Undertaker is the other. And I realize he started off in WCW or in World Class, but once you know guys were put into place, Undertaker was one of those who was extremely loyal and never jumped ship. And so, you know, I was always a WWE guy myself, so I always, you know, applauded that for him sticking around and always staying a part of Vince McMahon's organization.
Yeah, I don't think Taker would have jumped unless WWF was going out of business.
Mm-hmm.
I just think, yeah, he was too much of a big dog. You know, why would you want to jump and then just be another member of a already overinflated locker room with egos running amok? But it's interesting how he did transition from the dead man to the Biker Taker, and now back to the dead man. But I think I am hoping at Survivor Series he comes out in the original outfit. I think that would be fitting on the 25th anniversary, and then hopefully Kane will come out as Isaac Yankum.
I believe it was 95 they were on opposing teams. It was Isaac Yankum on one team and The Undertaker when he had his face crushed by Mabel and was wearing that mask. So there have been a lot of incarnations of both guys.
Yeah, in 96 he was Diesel.
Oh, yeah, Glenn Jacobs was?
Yeah.
Man. So... Yeah. Let's transition from just Undertaker talk and kind of talk about some Survivor Series moments and memories. Obviously, you know, we were talking earlier about 1990 when Undertaker debuted, and
Real quick, because I did some research for this.
That's what I was gonna go into your research there.
Okay, so let's go back. Let's jump in the Wayback Machine. Let's go back to 1990, November. Here are some of the pop culture tidbits from that time. You know, the new fall season had just started a few months earlier.
I was a senior in high school.
Okay. Some of the shows that premiered in 1990.
Yeah.
90210.
Oh, yes.
Blossom.
Okay.
In Living Color. The first television incarnation of The Flash. Which is now a huge hit for CW.
Yeah.
Not so much for CBS back then. A very underappreciated, untimely canceled show called Cop Rock.
Gosh, that was 1990?
Yeah.
Wow. And
I'm going to say two words, and you tell me your memory, if this show holds any memories and what it is for you.
Okay.
Captain Planet.
Captain Planet. He is our hero. I watched a little bit of Captain Planet. I mean, like I said, I was in high school at the time, so. But yeah, that was a Ted Turner thing, wasn't it?
Exactly. That's where I was going. I think the only thing that I've ever watched of Captain Planet is the closing credits because it came on right before the main event on Sunday afternoons.
Okay.
And so you would get the theme song, and then it'd go right into wrestling. So, anyway, the top album of the week, or actually, I think it was, say, like a six-week run, To the Extreme by Vanilla Ice.
Yes.
The top 10 songs for the week, and this is, looking at this list, I'm like, I think I only know three of these songs, so we'll see if you remember any of these.
Okay.
Number 10, which Ice Ice Baby came in at number 11. Unfortunately, it was falling down the charts at this time.
Okay.
Number 10, Knockin' Boots by Candyman.
No memory.
Okay. Number 9, Feels Good by Tony.
I remember that.
Okay.
I won't sing any of these, by the way, either.
Pray by MC Hammer was number 8.
Okay. Yeah.
From a Distance from Bette Midler, which I'm pretty sure you probably have as a ringtone at some point.
This is not true, but I do remember the song.
All right. Number 6, actually, surprisingly, was Something to Believe In by Poison.
Oh, yeah.
This is when, you know, hair metal was on its way, I think, slowly fine, so. And then you have the top 5, Because I Love You by Stevie B.
Yes, I do remember that one.
I actually saw Stevie B in concert like 2 years ago, and I don't even remember it until I just saw his name again. Groove is in the Heart by Delight, which still gets airplay. I'm Your Baby Tonight by Whitney Houston.
Okay.
And then the top 2 were More Than Words Can Say by Alias.
Yeah.
And I can't read my writing for this. I want to say Love Takes Time by...
Oh, yeah.
That is that Mariah Carey?
Mariah Carey, yeah.
Okay, yeah, I have Vermont Cavern right here, so I don't know what I'm writing. Yeah, and then the top five movies for the week were Home Alone.
Okay.
Number 1, Dances with Wolves, followed by 3 Men and a Little Lady, Misery, and Rocky V.
Wow, I have not seen Rocky V, and I have not seen all of Dances with Wolves, but the other ones, it's 3 Men and a Little Lady, go figure.
Yeah, Rocky V is actually my favorite of the series, which I know a lot of people do not like, but I think it's the best one.
Wow. Some interesting fun facts.
So
1990, what a year it was. And of course, also that year was the debut, very short-lived debut of the Gobbledygooker at Survivor Series in 1990. He was in the Big Egg. I actually watched the show yesterday, so it's fresh in my mind. But how cheesy and lame. I mean, that was, you know, you went from the debut of the Dead Man to, Hector Guerrero dressed in a turkey costume?
Yeah, and it's, I don't think I've ever read or heard what the definitive reasoning for the Gobbledygooker was, or what the plans were, or what... why it happened.
Yeah, I mean, it was kind of like Santa Claus, you know. Yes. Did we really expect to see this gimmick happening in April? I mean, what was the point of it all? Because I know he did a couple of other vignettes, but I don't ever remember the Gobbledygooker wrestling other than that gimmick battle royal at WrestleMania 17.
Yeah.
And then, of course, when Maurice dressed like him a few years ago during a Divas match or something.
I didn't watch the clip, but from Jimmy Fallon this week when Undertaker was on there, tombstoning, and that was just a regular turkey. I don't know if you saw.
Yeah, no, I did. It's on the My 1-2-3 Cents Facebook page too. Okay.
It was just a regular turkey, right? It wasn't a
right. It was not Gobbledygooker, but it was.
They borrowed the turkey suit from TNA.
I don't know, but you know who the turkey was?
Brad Maddox.
Yes. Which, is he, because he's on the alumni page now, so is he done with WWE? I thought
he's been doing house shows. He's been teaming with, I think he and Alex Riley were teaming up. I may be wrong. I'm just throwing out names. But
sure.
Yeah, I know he's done a few house shows recently.
I thought I'd read he was doing house shows again. You know, I think we both agree, as far as Survivor Series goes, we are fans of the traditional 5-on-5 or 4-on-4 elimination matches. Is that fair to put you in that category as well?
Actually, I'm going to disagree with you. I know, especially amongst you and our friend Travis, and we've all talked, that you guys really like Survivor Series. To me, Survivor Series has always been my least favorite pay-per-view.
Really?
Yeah, and maybe it's because I don't have the attention span for these long tag matches or given some of the talent, I just don't want to see them in long matches. But I've never been... Now, with that said, I think because of the history of Survivor Series, there should have been at least one Survivor Series match, although in this day and age of pay-per-view every month, I would say every match on the show should follow the Survivor Series setup, because that's the point of the pay-per-view. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's never been one of my big favorites.
Wow. I did not know that.
I learn something new every day.
Yeah, that's right. Well, that first year, I mean, obviously... Yeah, the first couple of years, it was all elimination matches. And what I found interesting was that you'd never see today is you had enough tag teams to do the tag team eliminations too. Mm-hmm. You had 10 teams total. You know, 5 good guys, 5 bad guy teams. And so, to me, that was always kind of an interesting mix into the whole Survivor Series setup. But go ahead.
Yeah, it's. We're going to get into, you know, our fantasy books or our series here later. And I tried doing a tag team matchup, but the balance of heel and faces right now is just so uneven that you could, even if you wanted to do it, it would be very random.
Yeah. Well, in Survivor Series, as we've talked about, you know, the first, up until 91 was the first year that they had a singles match included on the show, and that was Undertaker versus Hogan for the title. But in 1990, they kind of switched things up too by doing that Ultimate Survivors match where they took the winners of, or the sole survivors, and then had, you know, the faces on one side, the heels on the other side, and of course, Hogan and Warrior prevailed in that one. And then in 95, they kind of tried to change things up and they did one match with faces and heels teaming together, which was an interesting twist on it. But I think for the most part, it's been, you know, your traditional 5-on-5 or 4-on-4 rules since then. Although in 92, that was the first year that they really deviated from the elimination concept, and it was just one elimination match on that particular show, and everything else was either regular tag team matches, or you had your singles matches as well.
Yeah, I don't know why the change, and it may just been attention span and you know, just moving something out, but I don't know where I'm going with this thought. Jump back in here and say,
okay, well, you know, as much as I do like the Survivor Series, I don't like when they would do, like, for example, in 90, they had the Road Warriors or Legion of Doom and Demolition. You know, all 4 of them got disqualified at once. And then in 91, it was Piper's team versus Ric Flair's team. And I can't remember, but they, like, did a mass double disqualification on, like, several of them, throwing them out.
I was going to say, are we going to get all the Kevin's rhetorical questions for Survivor Series 1990?
No, I was sending Chad a lot of questions, you know, why did this happen? How did Gorilla Monsoon know the name of the Undertaker's finisher if they had never seen the Undertaker before? You know, it's that wrestling, you know, you got to take it with a grain of salt. And I realized that some of the things that were happening, obviously, you know, it is what it is. So, do you have, is there any particular year or, you know, obviously 97 was the year of the screw job, which is probably one of the most infamous Survivor Series moments of all time. Do you have any memories of Survivor Series that you want to share?
I wish we could strike 97 from the record of history.
So that's obviously not your favorite memory.
No, I mean, it's a shocking memory. I just think that the reliance to hang on to it and recreate it, even in other promotions, TNA, it was fine for what it was, and then it took on a life of its own. It's just, I'm over it. Much like a lot of things from the Attitude Era, like, I'm just over it, let's move on, let's create new stuff. But in saying that, I think one of my favorite memories, as we discussed last week, is 98. Mm-hmm. And part of that was being there live, and it's also just, it was a great tournament that had been set up over two or three months, and it was just a great night of wrestling and storytelling. But then it did use the Montreal Screwjob finish for The Rock beating Mankind. Other than that, 2001, which was the invasion, I think is just was the epitome of everything that was wrong with the invasion angle, because I'm trying to think who all was on. I think there was only like one person from WCW, ECW actually on the WCW, ECW team. And I'm trying to remember who all was.
I don't have my internet open right now, but it was Booker T, Stone Cold Steve Austin, Kurt Angle, Shane McMahon,
and I believe was on there,
and maybe RVD.
Maybe, I mean.
So, but yeah, it was, and I think, I mean, and that, this could be a conversation that could dominate a whole upcoming episode. The whole invasion angle in general, going with, you know, Vince McMahon, in my opinion, should have just spent the money and got everybody at once.
Yes.
Because it would have paid off tenfold in the long run.
Well, yes, they should have had everybody, because when you bring in the mid-carders, no one's going to take them serious.
Mm-hmm.
But also, like that first month, they kind of let WCW have the advantage, and then it just became... You know, when Diamond Dallas Page, a 5- or 4-time WCW champion, is getting pinned by The Undertaker's wife, it just shows you how bad managed that whole invasion angle was. Like,
yeah.
And, I mean, to be fair, WWE loyal fans had been conditioned not to like WCW, so they didn't give... I don't think they gave... A lot of the wrestlers, they didn't view them as serious wrestlers. But you also had, you know, Booker T losing the WCW title to The Rock right out of the gate.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that whole angle was botched from either due to ego or I don't know what other reasoning it could have been to be so poorly handled.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with that.
Okay, so back to the point, the alliance, as they were called, was Stone Cold, RVD, Kurt Angle, Booker T, and Shane McMahon. Yeah, so you had one ECW guy, one WCW guy, and the match came down to Austin turning, or Angle turning on the team, who Angle had only turned on WWE, I believe, like 2-3 weeks prior. So that whole match was just a cluster.
You know, and I'll throw this out there, and I've said this before. I didn't have a problem with Austin turning and joining WCW, but to really effectively sell him as a heel and make it believable, he should have gone back to the Stunning Steve gimmick.
Yeah.
But, I mean, like I said, this is an argument for a whole nother show.
Right.
Or not argument, but a conversation, I guess.
Yeah.
But... So you, what other memories do you have, or what other thoughts on Survivor Series did you have beyond 2001?
I'm trying to think, because I just watched a couple this week. I'm trying to remember which ones they were.
Again, we've talked about this before too. My recall is much better with those older shows.
Yeah.
You know, the last few years, I don't know that I could even tell you who was on last year's Survivor Series, or what the if they even had a limit. I mean, I'm really sitting here right now trying to think off the top of my head. And
I just watched 2005, which, going back to our discussion about 97, it's the title match was Cena versus Angle, and Bischoff was the GM of Raw, and he had a match against Teddy Long. Teddy Long was representing SmackDown. Bischoff is running Raw, so they had a match between the two of them, which I don't know, again, whose bright idea that one was. But in a backstage segment, Vince goes up to Bischoff, who's, you know, doing his karate move workout, and Bischoff's like, oh, you know, just wait and see, we're going to make history, you know, just like you screwed Bret Hart in Montreal, I'm going to screw John Cena, and Angle's going to be champ And it's just like, really? Like, why? And then, of course, Cena comes in. He's like, oh, you like screwing guys? Ha, ha, ha.
Yeah.
And then Vince walks away, sees Cena, and, you know, it's the infamous, keep it up, my N-word.
Yeah.
Booker T's are like, tell me he didn't just say that. So, and surprisingly, Vince still works for the company.
Yeah, funny how that works, isn't it? So let's talk about this year. Obviously, as we record this, there is still a week away from Survivor Series. It's coming up on the 22nd. There's going to be a lot of tournament action still happening on Raw and SmackDown leading into that. So right now, the only matches we know for sure, obviously, your finals for the heavyweight championship match, but also The Undertaker and Kane teaming up against just two members of the Wyatt family. We don't know yet who those two members are. And then a Divas title match with Charlotte defending against Paige.
Yes.
And that's all we have right now, right?
Yeah, 1 week out we have two matches. And not even two matches, because we only know half of one match. So.
Right. Now, who do you...
I think they don't have to worry about people actually buying pay-per-views anymore.
Yeah.
You don't have to sell it. You just have to get their $9.99.
That's true. That's a good point. So, is it your understanding, because I haven't really followed the rules of this tournament, is it your understanding that the tournament, it will just be the final match then at Survivor Series?
Well, I think so, because it was a 16-man tournament. You know, last week we discussed our thoughts on the tournament.
Mm-hmm.
And we had it as an 8-person tournament, which I think we had 7 of the 8 people correct. Somehow they threw in a Kalisto upset over Ryback to make the thing less predictable, maybe. So there are 8 persons still in the thing. So that's if they have 4 matches on Raw and then the other, and then 2 matches on SmackDown, that would give them the tournament final at Survivor Series. Or they could do, I guess, the semifinals and the finals at Survivor Series. I don't know. I've not seen any definitive word on which way it's going to lean.
The only thing I've seen so far is that Reigns is taking on Cesaro tomorrow night or Monday night on Raw.
Yeah.
That's been the only thing I've seen, but like I said, I haven't
kept up much with it. Unless they throw in more upsets and surprises, I think it's safe to say that the final match will either be the if they go heel face dynamic, it'll most likely be Reigns versus Owens. But if they really want to add, I guess, some interest, it'll be Reigns versus Ambrose.
Mm-hmm.
So take that with what you do with that what you will.
So I guess there is still a possibility that we might get a couple of elimination matches thrown together at the last minute. I don't know.
Yeah, I could see one elimination match being just haphazardly thrown together.
And speaking of the elimination matches, you and I both have a blog posted on the my123cents.com page, also on the Jittery Monkey link as well, called Our Survivor Series. And we basically put together some elimination matches. Now, this was a bit of a challenge, I thought, because we went along with current storylines/injuries. And that takes a lot of guys out. Seth Rollins, Rusev, Randy Orton, John Cena, and Brock Lesnar. Of course, Cena and Lesnar aren't hurt, but they are technically off the roster, if you will.
Off the roster, yeah. And I mean, I did go back, kind of book mine in the sense that there was some long-term booking in place,
mm-hmm.
and that there was no tournament match at Survivor, because in my mind, the champion should have already been crowned last week when Sheamus cashed in Money in the Bank. But
yes,
that being said, yeah. So I just went.
We both went with the understanding that there were going to be no singles match. This is all straight up elimination matches. We took the remaining men, and I tried to put together a Divas match, which didn't end up, like you said, didn't end up working. So, and we didn't use anybody from NXT either.
Yeah. I tried putting together a Divas match as well, 4-on-4, and the only way it would make sense without having one of the two team members from, you know, PCB, Team Bella or Team Bad on opposing teams would have been to bring Bayley up to be on the face side.
Mm-hmm.
but I don't think that would have been, that's not a way to debut Bayley. So, it was much difficult to get full teams after the first two matches, yeah.
So I'm just curious because, I mean, I obviously want people to go and read our blog, but pick one of yours and tell me who you have together. If you want to, you don't have to.
Yeah, I'm just trying to figure out which one. I guess my main event one, as you call it, and it's one that I try to do as kind of an NXT versus WWE matchup.
Uh-huh.
And unfortunately, the only person I could think of to put on as the fourth member was Adam Rose, and I took him off because, I mean, it's Adam Rose. When was the last time he was on TV? So on the what was called NXT side originally was Kevin Owens, Tyler Breeze, Bo Dallas, and then just for lack of anyone else available, I threw in The Miz. So I figured he might work well on that team.
Mm-hmm.
And that, they would be going up against Roman Reigns, Dolph Ziggler, Dean Ambrose, and Neville.
Hmm.
And again, Neville could have been on the NXT side, but then you're flipping face-heel dynamic. But, I mean, it could add tension, I guess, to the Kevin Owens and Neville relationship. But, yeah, so that was my...
Well, I have one of, and you mentioned Adam Rose, I put one together. It's basically the should've, could've, would've squadron of The Miz, Bo Dallas, Adam Rose, and Heath Slater versus Curtis Axel, Damian Sandow, Fandango, and Jack Swagger.
Wow.
And that's obviously not my main event, but that is just one that I threw together because I put everybody's name, and then there were some guys that I just could not pair up with anyone and couldn't find anyone to make sense. And part of it is, too, I don't know what their current affiliation, you know, Mark Henry, for example, is he face, is he heel, he kind of bounces, has been bouncing back and forth. So there's, I think we counted, what, 44 or 46 current?
43 or 44.
Yeah, healthy guys. We didn't count Chris Jericho, we didn't count The Rock, and again, like John Cena and Lesnar. But this also shows me that there's really not a very strong contingency of heels right now on the roster. With Rollins being hurt, which makes me wonder if there's going to be some kind of significant turn coming up at Survivor Series.
And that's where I'm putting this into, you know, online speculation, is if you have Reigns versus Ambrose for the title, one of them turns to kind of, like you said, put someone back on that heel side. Although I don't think it should be Ambrose, just because I don't think, I see him as the modern day Stone Cold. I think fans are going to want to cheer him no matter what.
Right.
And I think not the best thing, but, and I think we discussed this a little bit last week too, it's if you have Reigns turn, you're kind of going in the same path of Rocky Maivia, where he came in, he was all, you know, he was supposed to be the next big baby face, and the fans turned on him, and then he turned on the fans just as he was starting to get over, and it kind of helped propel him because the persona of The Rock worked better as a heel, but I don't know if Roman Reigns' persona is good enough to carry a heel character change.
Yeah. And who would you say right now, I mean, I'm just looking at this, I mean, I would probably go with Kevin Owens or Alberto Del Rio as your top, because of course they're the two secondary champions, as your top heels in the company right now.
Yeah, I don't know if ADR, or Alberto Del Rio, I don't know if he is, because he's still fresh, you know, coming back. I don't know how the crowd's going to react to him, say, a month from now, because he's still going to be over. I think Kevin Owens is definitely... Because Kevin Owens doesn't try to be the cool heel. He's just, he's out for Kevin Owens.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that helped separate him, although I think the fans are still going to cheer him just because of his indie cred. You know, there's a lot of people that really like Kevin Steen. So other than that, I think Sheamus would probably be up there if they wanted to get behind him again. But I think Sheamus is getting into that kind of go away heat.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe that's just me.
And I guess that's the other thing too, is I didn't think about it until you just said his name. I mean, you could have a face-face main event for the title with Reigns and Ambrose, and then Sheamus cashes in,
wins,
and then becomes the heel champion, and then you've got two already ready-to-go babyfaces pursuing, or, you know, in contention, I guess, to pursue the championship.
Yeah, you can do that. And then I think Bray Wyatt is also there, if they would build him up. And this goes back into bad booking, which granted it happened on SmackDown, and I don't know how many people actually watched SmackDown, but, you know, a couple weeks ago, after Hell in a Cell and following Raw, the Wyatt family kidnapped Taker, they kidnapped Kane. Last week on Raw, Bray comes out and says, I've got their powers now, and he makes lightning shoot from the sky to the stage. Kind of hokey. And then on Raw, or on SmackDown, Taker and Kane show up and beat down all four members of the Wyatts. And so now it's like, okay, why do I want to see the two-on-two match when two guys have already taken out all four?
Right.
So, I don't know, it'll be interesting to see. I think the Wyatt family needs to win that match, given this is the 25th anniversary of Taker, and that's how they're selling it. I don't see Taker losing, although I think it would be a nice, if they would have gone with a 4-on-4 matchup, I think it would have been a nice throwback to have Taker get disqualified, to throw back to his first appearance, and he could be disqualified while not even being the legal man in the ring. So.
Just like 25 years ago.
Just like 25 years ago, exactly.
Alrighty, well, any other final thoughts as we begin to wrap up episode 51 of My 1-2-3 Cents, the podcast?
No, I mean, it's going to be interesting to see what happens on Raw and SmackDown to flush out the rest of this card, and it'll be interesting to see what happens at Survivor Series. We'll go from there, and then hopefully once that's done, we can start speculating on what's going to happen at WrestleMania.
Yeah, definitely.
It's about time to start speculating because right now, who's going to win the Rumble? Who would be your top pick to win the Rumble?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I mean, everything. Rollins' injury, I think, obviously has thrown a monkey wrench in a lot of things, which is a good thing, I think. It's going to force them to become a little, or hopefully force them to become a little more creative and come up with, other alternatives other than John Cena or Brock Lesnar, which. For right now, it appears that they're going in that direction, but we'll have to wait and see what happens. And hopefully, Cena doesn't make his big return at the Rumble and win that event, or Brock Lesnar for that matter. But I think after Sunday, we'll have more indication of who might be a good contender to be the winner of the Royal Rumble.
Exactly. All right. So. Just keep watching and see what happens.
That's right. And keep listening, too, everybody. Thanks so much for downloading and sharing, whether it's on iTunes or at jitterymonkey.com. And don't forget to check out the blog at my123cents.com.
This is a production of the Jittery Monkey Podcast Network. For more jittery shenanigans, go to jitterymonkey.com.